It is 7:31, time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Blaise Bonpane. Blaise is a former Maryknoll priest serving in Central America. He is a professor at UCLA and California State University. He is a contributor to the LA Times and New York Times. He is a news commentator and host of the weekly radio program World Focus, which is on Pacifica Radio KPFK in Los Angeles. He is author of numerous books, including his latest book, Common Sense for the 21st Century, and he is director of the Office of the Americas. Blaise, thanks for spending time with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mike.
Let me begin and ask you if you could tell us about the Office of the Americas.
Certainly. We started back in 1983 as a nonprofit, concerned about all the wars going on at that time and feeling that we could help to build a peace system to replace the war system in which we've all lived our lives. And we began sending people to see the wars in Central America, in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, in delegations. And we found these delegations were extremely helpful because people would come back home, speak in their churches about what they saw. And ultimately, we planned a march from Panama City to Mexico City through seven countries in 85, 86 to stop the war in Central America. And during that period, we became very conscious of the Iran-Contra scandal, which was going on before our very eyes. And we were so happy it became publicly known as one of the great scandals in U.S. history, to have arms going to the Ayatollah Khomeini illegally, money coming from the Ayatollah to pay for the Contras, and then cocaine coming back to the United States, which was distributed through Los Angeles as crack, and the great work of Gary Webb in uncovering this whole story. So since that time, we've just done as much education as we can in the colleges, the high schools, showing that peace is a possibility and that we are the realists. Our view is that people who just say, well, you're crazy idealists, they're the ones that are not being realistic, because the planet cannot be sustained with so-called modern warfare. I mean, this planet can't be sustained with nuclear war. And we have these tens of thousands of weapons that through accident or bad will could be used. And so the realists are those who are saying, blow the whistle, end the war system, work it out through international law, and we're the realists. We're not just saying something that's dreamy-eyed, you know. We don't know if it'll happen in our lifetime, but that's not relevant. We feel that it will happen. It has to happen.
And have you been involved then with the current war on Iraq?
Very much so. Iraq One broke out, I went to Baghdad in 91, and it was very, very tragic to realize all these people that we visited with were about to be greeted by 88,000 tons of bombs in 91. It was literally overwhelming. And so we came back home, and we had demonstrations against the war, which had not yet started. And then in early January, mid-January of 91, my son, who is right here, and my wife and I were all hogtied at the federal building. We all wound up in down in the tank there in the federal building because we were apparently blocking the exit to the federal building. And when the bombing started in 91, we were locked up, and we felt this is the best place you can be at a time like this when your country is bombing that way. Now, that bombing has continued for 15 years. People forgot that. They forgot that all during the Clinton administration, the bombing continued, and the number of deaths during the Clinton administration were horrendous because of the sanctions. There were thousands of young people die every month. More people died probably during the Clinton administration than during the current Bush administration. It's hard to believe. But so we've been very opposed to this war, and we're extremely excited to see the leadership coming from the veterans. The first veteran who just blew the whistle was Camilo Mejia. He's the son of Carlos Mejia Godoy, one of the most famous musicians in Nicaragua. And he was in the U.S. Marines, and he said, I'm not going back to Iraq because the war is immoral and illegal. He served 9 months in federal lockup. He's free now, and he's out, and he's speaking around the country. Then he was followed by an amazing case of Aden Delgado. Aden was an MP at Abu Ghraib prison who saw what was going on, and he said, folks, wait a minute. I'm out of here. I'm a CO. I don't coexist with this kind of thing, with torture and so on. You've got to declare me a CO. And he was terribly persecuted by his own officers. They said, well, you won't need your body armor anymore. They took that away. And then when he'd go and sit in a mess hall, nobody would sit with him. But, surprisingly, he got CO status. He got an honorable discharge. And he's now all over the country explaining why he took that position. And recently, I was with him, Aden Delgado, and Camila Mejia in San Diego for the court-martial of Pablo Paredes. Pablo was a petty officer who was supposed to take 3,000 troops on his ship to Iraq. The Bonhomme Richard was the name of the ship, and he said, I'm not going. I don't want to bring these young men to Iraq from what I've known about it. So they put him through a court-martial, and while the court-martial was underway, we were in a park just outside putting on a mock trial that Pablo had written about, let's put the war on trial, not Pablo. To our amazement, the judge, Judge Glanced, who is a commander in the Navy, gave this amazing statement at the sentencing phase. He said, it's understandable that any of our troops might believe that the wars in Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, and Iraq are illegal. And he blew us away, and Pablo Paredes did not get one day of punishment. He's getting an honorable discharge. And it's a very strong, what you'd say, mutation in the attitude that usually comes forth in these military hearings. It's a huge change, which helps us to believe that the leadership of the military itself is turning against this horrible conflict in Iraq. And there are thousands of young people that have come out and are maybe AWOL, whatever, and more are surfacing now. It's very hard to surface when you're in an illegal situation. Some have gone to Canada, and others will be coming out. We have a wonderful group known as Iraq Veterans Against the War. Very clear spokespeople for why we should not be there, and the harm that we're doing internationally to not only the people in Iraq, but to the United States of America.
There's been criticism on the left that people who oppose the war need to put a lot more effort into reaching out, speaking to veterans and speaking to those people that are serving. Do you see that as one of the goals of your organization?
Yes, definitely. There is a very strong myth about the Vietnam War that the peace movement was, quote, spitting at the veterans. This is so untrue that a professor back at Boston College wrote a book called Spitting Image. He said, look, I'm a Vietnam vet. We always had the warmest relationship with the peace movement. There may have been one psychotic spitting at us somewhere, but the peace movement was spitting at nobody. It was saying that we have coffee houses we'd like you to be part of and so on. And the same thing exists today. The relationship between the peace movement and the troops is excellent, as is shown at Arlington West. These marvelous gatherings we've had on Santa Barbara Beach, Santa Monica Beach, Huntington Beach, and Oceanside, where every Sunday morning the veterans come out at 7 o'clock and now put up 1,700 markers, some crosses, some Stars of David, and they put those on the beach in perfect order, and they start putting names on each cross, and they ask people to take from a list of names and put that name on an individual cross. The program is run by veterans. Young men and women in the service come out. It's a very touching experience, and of course a film has been made about it called Arlington West, which we're showing in schools all around the country. There's a lot of counter recruiting going on. As you know, all recruitment had to stop in this country 2 weeks ago because there had been so much lying been so much abuse of the recruiting process. People saying things like, well, if you join the reserve, you'll never have to go overseas. Well, it's just not true, you know. Or you're going to get an education. And then we'd bring in fellows who had commanded companies. One fellow said, look, I had 73 troops under me. Three of them got any kind of education. Said, it's great to talk about getting education. They have to have money taken out of their salary for an education fund, and then frequently they don't get it anyway. So the whole recruiting system is in shambles. They've been recruiting dope addicts, trying to sober them up and get them in, and this is, of course, ridiculous as well. So we are into counter-recruiting, because that recruiting goes on at the poorest schools, as you know, becomes a poverty draft. And they glorify this type of service as though it's all fun and games. And then the young people get into stop loss. They literally cannot get out. They could be in there till they're 70 years of age because of the fine print. And so we're there to oppose that kind of recruiting. That's part and parcel of our work. We call it recruiting for peace. And our hope is for immediate withdrawal of the troops. We have a congresswoman in California, Woolsey, who has a resolution in for immediate withdrawal, and we support that. So we feel that it's time to bring our troops home and to not make a mistake like this again. It's just tearing our country apart, and it's been death to some 200,000 Iraqis in the most recent phase. And if you count everything since 91, we're talking about millions of dead in Iraq. So our hope is that people will understand the importance of peacemaking. And our web, by the way, is simply officeoftheamericas.org. One word, Office of the Americas. That's plural. Officeoftheamericas.org, and you've got it.
I believe in looking at your website that one of the things you're working towards, well, is nonviolent tools of dialogue.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you can talk about that, as well as that's combined with Together with Militant Grassroots Action.
Yes, exactly. Nonviolent in dialogue is so important because, as you know, in our commercial media, we're very much into sound bites, you know. Before abortion, against abortion. I hate you. You know, this guy, well, we're not going anywhere like that. We have to start engaging in conversations where people can say, look, do you know how abortion goes down? It goes down when we have health care as a right and when we have extensive sex education. We can prove that in a country like Holland. Holland had legal abortion. Abortion's gone down every year for those two reasons. So do you want it to go down? Well, do these things and it will go down. It doesn't go down by having people's front door broken in and saying, hey, we think an abortion took place here. In other words, it doesn't go down by way of law enforcement. It goes down by way of education and, together with that, health care. So these dialogues aren't there because of sound bites. Yes, no. You know, wait a minute. Let's get a little more gay marriage, you know. Well, look, your church doesn't approve of it. That's wonderful. We're not talking about your church. We're talking about a property agreement for the state of Washington, a property agreement for the state of California, in which you receive some 100 benefits by virtue of having this union. So, in other words, we're talking about let's converse, and the same applies on war and peace issues. I mean, to use words like un-American for those who are in favor of peace is so infantile and so sick that it's almost indescribable. Our founders called this type of so-called patriotism the last refuge of scoundrels. They hated to see people glorify war as if that's how you become a good citizen. Well, it's not how you become a good citizen, you know. So all of these issues, I think, are very important at this time, and it makes us very happy to see so many military personnel working with us. I know I was in the Marine Reserve in 1950 at a time when you could still resign, and I resigned and I went off to the seminary. Within weeks, the Korean war broke out, and the young men that I trained with at Quantico, Virginia, in the platoon leaders class, most of them just didn't come back. So I think of that all the time, because once again, we're in tension with Korea. I don't think our people understand, we have never had a peace treaty in Korea. The war is not over. We had a ceasefire, period. And now it's the most militarized place in the world. Los Angeles, as you know, has a huge Korean population. I was at their Buddhist temple last week speaking with them, and what I find is that the Koreans at this time in the South are in favor of reunification. They say one culture, one language, one country. Germany did it. We have to reunite. And from Washington, we just hear saber rattling, you know. And these things are not okay.
Talk about militant grassroots action. Militant,
right,
doesn't sound very peaceful to some people.
Militant means just that. Militant means demonstrations whereby people can be heard from, sometimes rather quiet ones known as vigils. Militants means marches. We're talking now with the veterans about a march from Los Angeles to Washington, and we asked Aiden Delgado, the former Abu Ghraib MP, to be the convener of that march. This will be a militant march, but it'll be a march where each city that the marches go through will be informed. There'll be a reception committee. You deal with the local police long before you get there. No surprises. A very orderly kind of militant action, whereby you're educating people all the way. Probably one of the great militant actions we ever saw was right here in Seattle in 99 with the World Trade Organization. This young man sitting here was 5 days in jail because he had a button on, you know, and he recently went through that with the police here and the courts, saying that it was not right to arrest people simply because they were in that area. Well, he was in that area, and it was 5 days in prison. That was very militant. We oppose those who break with the plans for any march. If there's a small group of five or six coming in out of nowhere that are breaking windows or whatever, we make it very clear to them that, hey, this is not part of the program. We don't know where you came from, but we'd like you to leave this area, because we've worked very hard to pull together this militant nonviolent activity, and we don't feel that throwing stones or bottles or breaking windows is doing any good at all. And we'd like you to leave us and do your thing somewhere, but not here. And so we have monitors at every one of our gatherings to watch for that type of thing. Historically, some of it has been police provocateurs. We have seen that. I know over the years, over the past 40 years, I have never known anyone who burned a flag. I have always seen some costumed individual come out of nowhere with a kerosene-soaked flag and burn it, and everybody's saying, who's that? You know, he's not with us. So it's a great way to take away from a demonstration, so that's on the front page of the paper tomorrow, or someone else in the old days would come in with a hammer and sickle flag, you know. And we say, where did that thing come from? You know, did it come from the local police, or is it just the opposition? What kind of a joke is this? But it's very, very harmful, because those things will always be photographed, and they'll say, oh, that whole group of people are a bunch of flag burners. You know, well, please. You know? But we have to watch for that type of activity. Anytime you're in public, you can get that type of reaction from surprise elements. So we do watch for that. But it is militant nonviolence, because it's against the conventional wisdom. And we feel the commercial media has been so pro-war, so much mongering, war-mongering from the major media. I mean, this wonderful film called Outfoxed has been produced showing how Fox News has done so much war-mongering over the recent years. And this is terribly unfortunate, because in the long run, war is not good for the economy or anything else, you know. We think of the 1,700 who have died, but there are thousands who have been horribly wounded, and then some that come home who are allegedly completely whole, and they're suffering from severe psychosis, neurosis, stress syndrome, delayed stress syndrome, all of this. So it's not good for our country. We can't deliver health care to our people as well as France can. We can't deliver education as well as most European countries can. These great universities that were free are now very expensive. Not too long ago, if you take 50 years ago, the University of California would cost approximately $50 a semester, including health care. That's gone. And these were great institutions. They were not lesser institutions at the time. Perhaps they were greater. They had tremendous amount of dissent, critical thinking going on in those universities. And to see them upping the tuition all the time is just one of the signs that we're spending money in areas where we shouldn't be.
I'm wondering if we can talk a bit about what is currently going on in Latin America, because it's on a lot of levels, it's very inspiring. We're looking at Bolivia.
Yes.
What some newspapers, like perhaps Fox, would be painting, that they're in turmoil.
Yes.
What do you see as happening?
Well, I think it's very exciting, starting with the new leadership in Latin America. We have progressive leadership being elected all over Latin America, from Argentina all the way up to the Central American countries. But Bolivia is quite striking, being the poorest country in the Americas, a landlocked country, an Aymara and Quechua country where many people don't speak Spanish. They are enormously well organized, and they march nonviolently from Los Altos in the high country near La Paz to the capital, and they have removed two presidents and perhaps now a third. Historically, in the past, the military would have come out and shot them all. We hope this won't happen again, because the military itself is Aymara and Quechua indigenous people. So our hopes are very high that the Bolivians living in Santa Cruz, which is the more non-indigenous, more affluent area, won't create a civil war situation, but show the respect for the indigenous people, who are the majority. We have very few countries with an indigenous majority. Peru would be one, Ecuador is another, that has shown this kind of militant leadership. They've removed two presidents nonviolently in recent years with their Quechua speaking people. This is nonviolence at its best. It used to be the glorification of the armed struggle in Latin America, Che Guevara as the image, etc. This is gone. I mean, the people of Brazil put in someone right out of the workers' movement, Lula, you know, and the people in Uruguay for the first time in 170 years put in a progressive that brought in former rebels and people of that kind into the government in order to work on behalf of the poor. The Central American nations, that where billions of our money was spent to destroy the rebel movement, those rebel movements have become legitimate political organizations. The FSLN of Nicaragua is the most powerful political party in the country. The FMLN in El Salvador is the most powerful growing political party, in charge of practically every mayoral office in El Salvador. In Guatemala, the URNG rebels have morphed into a political movement. This is all very exciting because it is, it's again, nonviolent action that some of it initiated with a very violent civil war. And throughout the Americas, we're seeing this exciting development. But I do believe at this time Bolivia is in the vanguard. It's very, very dangerous. Dr. King made it clear that we can have casualties in the nonviolent movement, and we've always had casualties, but not as serious. I mean, we lost Rachel Corrie from this part of the country in Palestine, and we lost wonderful Marla Ruska in Iraq. She gave me a big hug just before she left the last time, but she had worked so avidly to get the data from Iraq about just who was being killed over there as an individual, and then she was blown away by a, I believe it was a suicide bomber that attacked a truck that was next to where she was. So yes, we have casualties. We hope the Bolivians don't have casualties as a result of military action against a very legitimate movement of people who have been there for centuries, you know. And another problem they have there is that coca, which is a very mild stimulant, has been in their culture for 5,000 years. And we come in to spray coca. I mean, they use it in religious services. They use it in some areas as a form of money. It is not cocaine. And it's only cocaine when chemicals come in from the United States to make it into cocaine. It is a mild drug that is very important to their culture and to living at 13,000 feet altitude. It's very helpful to them. So what's happening now is that Latin America is giving us hope in the United States. Many people in our country are very despondent. And if we look at Latin America, we can gain hope from what they have done out of their poverty and their objection to the World Trade Organization and their what they call neoliberalismo, the whole concept of having economic policy created in Geneva or in Washington and then imposed on people. It's been counterproductive. The WTO gathering here was quite correct, and people simply don't want it. Now even the leadership in these countries is turning away from it, so it's a very exciting moment. And I hope we can get out of the war business and start observing what the rest of the world is doing, how they're coming together in opposition, actually.
And doing so under much harsher conditions than we have here in the U.S. It's always interesting to hear my associates saying, you know, how tough it is, and they want to wring their hands and give up.
Absolutely. And part of our problem is our affluence here, because we have it very good, and it's very hard for us to acknowledge these problems. And people in Bolivia and Ecuador, who literally have nothing but their feet, are marching with those feet. Yeah.
One more time, could you tell people how they can contact your organization?
Sure. We're the Office of the Americas. We're located in Los Angeles. Our phone number is 323-852-9808. That's 323-852-9808. Web is simply Office of the Americas, written as one word, .org, officeoftheamericas.org, and we'd love to hear from you. And we hope that everyone will realize that they can do something on behalf of creating a peace system to replace the war system, and to realize that wars are literally fought by slaves. I heard that when I got to the Marine boot camp. I heard, keep your mouth shut, do what you're told, and follow orders. That's how you speak to a slave, isn't it? And so wars have always been fought by slaves. And we want to stop that, just as we stopped slavery in the United States in the 1860s. So we have work to do.
All right, Blaze, I want to thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Mike.
We've just been talking with Blaze Bonpain. He is director of the Office of the Americas, and you can find his latest book in your bookstore, and it is entitled Common Sense for the 21st Century.